B-Pod Studios.
The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey. The Sports Up Hockey Show. With Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerod, and Bob Beer. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. 98.5, The Sports Up.
No parents, no rules, no shirts, and best of all,
it's Toucher and Rich.
I read you loud and clear.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Mark Cimelli's got a new recliner. A chair whose cushions he'll sleep up above.
I sleep on it.
Fine. You gotta remember when you make a meatball.
All the meatballs will go.
The number one ingredient is love.
You gotta put a lot of love in it when you make the meatball.
98.5, The Sports Hub, with Toucher and Rich. There was a story about a guy in South Africa. A whale put him in his mouth, and he realized he was too big to be swallowed, and blah, 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 blah. So that led to young Ted Johnson. I don't know if you know this, but at one point, not so long ago, Nicholas was laying nude in his bed where he had been for 2 days. In some sort of semi-coma state.
Mm-hmm.
And his girlfriend came in and saw him, and now he has a valve in his heart, and everything's gone bonkers. He's 5'5", 210 pounds, and he is in here. But he started telling us...
Or 190. 210 or 190.
Whatever, it's too much. So
you are a dick, you...
All right, so we were talking off the air, and little did we know that young sickly Nicholas, that was not the only time that he almost faced death. Now, Nick claims that when he was 3 years old, you recall this incident.
Vaguely, yeah.
Okay, so your dad, Mark Cimelli, is on, and again, I don't want to bother the man too much. Mr. Cimelli, hello.
Good morning, good morning.
All right, so
two good mornings.
How late have you been on? What time did you get up today?
3:30.
Oh, okay. So you get up at 3:30, and then what happens when you're up?
Right. You know, it takes me a couple minutes to be able to get up, but once I'm up, I get the coffee on. You know, this daylight savings so early, it's got me all fouled up. So I should be sleeping later, but I'm not. So I'm up at 3:30. Half my day's done by 7 o'clock.
How many recliners now are in your living room?
3 in the living room and 1 in the bedroom. The new one and the other 2 are still here in the living room. And then I have 1 in the bedroom. And that's all the chairs I have in the house. Yeah, I have dining room chairs, but that's it.
Okay, so do you transfer from chair to chair? Do you still? I would imagine.
Well, I'm pretty well now stuck in happily in my new recliner because of the massage, and I get a workout like Ted every morning just in my chair. You know.
So you use the massage? You find it relaxing?
Oh, I do, and the headrest. Being able to adjust the headrest, depending on how many Manhattans I had last night, you know, it helps keep your head up, you know, it's unbelievable.
Now, when will be, because you got up at 3:30, when will be the first Manhattan of the day?
3 o'clock.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Everybody knows that.
I mean, that is what it is.
Daylight savings or not.
All right, so first...
If I get upset by anything during the day, because I can't really watch the news anymore, because every ounce of it upsets me. Other than you guys make me happy for 4 hours, you know, I may push 2 o'clock some days if it's cold and rainy, but generally 1 at 3, 1 at 4. Okay. And they're good Manhattans, believe me.
Okay.
They're good Manhattans.
Yeah, just 1 at 3 and 1 at 4. And then you're in bed by, what, 5?
7.
Okay.
7.
All right.
If I can make it to 7.
Okay.
Know?
All right. So Nicholas was telling us that, first of all, you took him on a beautiful trip to Florida, and you went down to SeaWorld.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And now, Nicholas said he was very close to death at the hands of Shamu, the killer whale.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Both he and I were close to death.
Okay.
He was close to death because of Shamu, the killer whale, And I was close to death because my wife was going to kill me because somehow he got down to the edge of the pool.
All right. Did you realize at that time there wasn't much of a future for Nicholas?
No, because I was in the bear line. I had Nicholas's first word to 3 and a half was gift shop. So, you know, you get to these amusement places, and I now at this point I have 3 children. And, you know, you got to go to the gift shop first, get that out of the way so they got something to play with during the show. So the girls got their little gifts. Olivia was a baby, but, you know, and Nick got what he got. And I got them all situated with my ex-wife and the babysitter. And I look over to my left, and there's the bear line. To get a couple of brewskis. So it's hot. It's 110 degrees, and the place smells like fish, you know. So I get down to the line. I get them all settled, and beers at $9 a beer. So I got one in each hand, of course, you know.
Yeah, because if they're $9, I mean, you can't drop them.
All right, skip to the whale part.
No. Let him tell the story.
Devil's in the details, man.
All right. All of a sudden, I hear all this commotion, and the worst sound any man can hear when he's at a place like that is his wife screaming his name from the bleachers. All I kept hearing is her screaming, "Mark, Mark." So I look over, and all the SeaWorld people are diving into the swimming pool. And so I got I got a beer in the left hand, a beer in the right hand.
And they were $9.
I'm not going to spill them, right? $18. And I run for the pool. And what Nicholas had bought at the gift shop was a rubber snake. So he's standing over the pool edge, holding the rubber snake, and the killer whale thought he was going to feed him. So the whale is making a beeline for Nick, and all these wonderful SeaWorld people are diving in the pool trying to distract the whales. So I run, I get up to him. Now, I can't put my beard down, but I got one in each hand. So I get one leg up, and I scoop him with my leg away from the pool.
Did you spill any beer?
Not a drop.
Yeah.
Not a drop. But the problem was I'm trying to guzzle one down before I get up to the bleachers because my wife's going to be screaming at me, you know?
Right. So okay. Right, so you're trying to take some of the pain away. Now, Nick, remember this vaguely. This never, it never, when the whale was coming right at you, it didn't have a...
I wasn't scared when the whale was coming up. I was trying to give the whale like a gift, like feed it and stuff. I didn't know how dangerous the situation was.
Right. So you thought that it would like a rubber snake?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the people there didn't think any of this was funny.
No.
I bet not.
Did they want to put Nick in a home or something after this?
Well, it would have been cheaper to get another kid than to get those 2 beers at $18.
So when you rescued him, were you able to get more beer?
Well, of course, by that point, you know, I was in pretty bad place with Nick's mother, so I had to coast for the rest of the afternoon and fry in 110 degree weather. You know, I would have drank seawater at that point. You know, it was horrible.
All right.
But I did get more beer. Believe me, you know, plenty of beer.
All right. So Nick, do you remember these trips down to Florida?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
There were a lot of them.
There were a lot of them.
Did Nick do anything else that was irresponsible?
Oh, jeez.
Did Nick do anything else that was irresponsible? Well, you know, I had to keep protecting him from getting killed all the time, you know, whether he fell off the boat or you know. We got very cautious as Nick was in his 4-year-old, 5-year-old state, you know, to keep him keep them safe, you know. Yeah.
Did you have the problems, the same problems with your daughters when they were younger?
No, they were active kids. They were very active kids. But, no, you know, the youngest rode a tricycle into the swimming pool one day and was still pedaling when I came home from work. At the bottom of the pool, she had just gone in. So I end up diving in the pool with a three-piece suit on and my briefcase right in the pool to pull the kid up, and she wouldn't let go of the tricycle, you know?
All right, what would have happened if you didn't show up at that very moment?
Yeah, I'd be down to two kids.
he'll dive in the pool to save his daughter with a three-piece suit, but he's not going to spill any beer to save his
daughter. No, there's obviously a priority.
The principle of the thing, you know, $9 beer, man.
There's obviously a hierarchy in the Jamelli family.
Do you realize that he had that snake for years?
I did.
Had that snake for years. He loved that snake, you know?
Was it his best friend?
Yeah, that time, yeah. Yeah, that and dinosaurs. You know, that was his best friend.
I did love dinosaurs. He loved dinosaurs?
Oh, he loved. We went to every museum. We actually took one April vacation, just the kids and I. My ex-wife didn't want to do the trip. And we traced dinosaur sightings, or you know, like footprints and dropping, all this stuff.
That sounds
up
fun.
And down
it was fun.
New England.
I wanted to be a paleontologist when I was a kid.
That's actually kind of cool.
Right. At what point, Mark, did you realize that Nick was not going to be able to be a paleontologist?
I still, you know, there's always hope, Fred. Well, there's always hope.
Well, you're a very positive guy, so I'm glad that you still feel that way.
Yeah. You know, it was, but those family trips, I mean, you know, we all joke about them, but they are taxing and they are exhausting. And when you get back from the family trip, and then you got to go to work the next morning, and everybody goes, "How was your vacation? Give me a break," you know? Exhausting. Jeez.
But the stories last a lifetime, right?
That's right.
They do. They do.
They sure do.
When they turn out well. You know?
Right, because no one dies.
Right.
Right, because you always get home in the nick of time. What? Can I ask you, did you often wear a three-piece suit?
In those days, I did, yeah.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah. No, I'm sort of like Ted. You know how he puts on the tight-fitting shirt, you know, first? I used to have the tight-fitting three-piece suit to hold everything in. And the moment I undid the vest, forget it. Everything came out, you know?
Yeah, it was like an early edition of Spanx. I understand what you're saying.
But in those days, people, you dressed to go to work. You dressed every day, you know? You shirt and tie every day.
At Manhattan's at lunch break, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, beyond. I had one customer. He was a 7 Manhattan drinker at lunch.
Oof. 7 Manhattans at lunch?
At lunch. And he was one of my biggest accounts. And I said to my father, who was still alive, God rest his soul, I said, "Dad, what do I do?" He goes, "I know the guy." He goes, "Two blocks up on your right is a Days Inn. Book a room when you get to town." So when you leave the luncheon, you go to the Days Inn and you sleep it off for a few hours before you try to drive home.
Well, those were the days, huh?
Well, three martini lunches. My father worked with a guy that they said, if you don't get the work in and have him look at it before noon, you're screwed because he's going to start throwing stuff around. All right. Well, listen, Mr. Jamelli, what a father, I got to tell you.
Awesome.
And wonderful trips that you took. And it's always a great pleasure to talk to you.
Well, I appreciate everything, and I appreciate you guys. It's great. It's great. Great radio every morning.
All right,
thank you. Mr. Jamelli.
All right, thank you.
Take care, kid. Take care,
Chuck. Yeah. All right, there you go. So, Nick,
you're lucky. You got a great dad, man.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Does it feel good that he wouldn't drop the beers to...
Yeah, it's a great feeling. Okay. Obviously, it's a priority.
All right, well...
He's still going to therapy for that one.
Yeah. Well, hopefully people let you know that they like your dad more than you. All right.
They do.
No, a lot. I had a guy tell me, the guy that I know very well, he's like, you know, hey, I heard your show when you were sick, and it was one of the greatest shows you guys ever had. Yeah.
Thanks, that is insulting.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, he said, oh, yeah, they were talking about Space Savers in Boston. I said, this is the great, it was insulting for two reasons. One, Obviously, the greatest show ever was when I wasn't there. And two, the best bit we've done in years is having people call up and say how they save spots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a fine show.
It was okay.
I mean, because okay. I think the guy
it was
like,
the greatest show ever. It was just okay.
All right. Well, thank you for, you know.
We got your back,
I have a very fragile ego. Thank you. All right. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Hey, it's Maz with some advice for you. Take the train, and guess what? $10 weekends on commuter rail are back for 2019. Whether you're heading into Boston for a game or getting out to the city for fun, you can take unlimited trips all weekend long for just 10 bucks. Visit mbta.com/massbytrain and get tickets on the mTicket app.
Hey, it's Felger here at Cambridge Savings Bank, my official bank. You are the only thing that matters. Their goal is to treat every customer like their only customer. Check them out at cambridgesavings.com/corporatebanking. Member FDIC, member D.
Hot sauce, candy. Matt Schaefer has you covered with the Sports Hub Grub Podcast. 98.5thesportshub.com, bpodstudios.com, and the Sports Hub app.
Hi, how are you, honey? Hello!
This is where Boston talks sports.
I'm overwhelmed.
Toucher and Rich.
You can eat a lot at one sitting.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Trent Brown, the Patriots' left tackle, intends to sign a four-year, $66 million contract with the Oakland Raiders. They got Antonio Brown over the weekend. They're going to get Trent Brown this week. What can Brown do for you in Oakland? Brown can do an awful lot. The deal includes $36.75 million in guaranteed money and makes him the highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history.
Trent Brown signing is genius. Way to go, Quinn and Patricia, for really putting a lot of pressure on yourselves now. You're not going to win that division.
Nope.
By any stretch of the imagination. No. All you've done is made yourself more mediocre. Like, you were on the low end of mediocre.
Now you win maybe 8 or 9 games instead of 6.
Which you did with Caldwell, who you fired.
Right.
So, there you have it. There you go. Big signings there.
Isn't it funny that you talk about the Trent Brown signing and you think about how much luck plays into things?
Oh, my God. He's completely he played one season. And he played for the Patriots.
But the way he got to the Patriots to even be playing.
Yes.
Is think about it. So he gets traded. The 49ers trade him here.
As a right tackle.
As
a right tackle.
He's slotted to what, maybe be a backup to Isaiah Wynn, or if Isaiah, you know, no one's expecting Isaiah Wynn to tear his Achilles. He's expecting him, first rounder, to come in and compete for the starting job. So you get traded to a team that drafts the guy to play the position that you're slated to play, and he tears his Achilles early in camp. So you get to play there the entire season. You win the Super Bowl, and then you win the largest payday of an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
And when one year, you did something on film, and it gets you to be the highest paid at your position, luck is involved in that big time. And then you look at Trey Flowers, all the pass rushers, all the top pass rushers that were going to become potential free agents are all franchised.
Yep.
That leads a nice little, you know, kind of funnels right to Trey Flowers, where he gets a big payday from Detroit.
Well, that's the thing, is that you look at these teams like Detroit and Oakland, and they're never going to be good. And they spend all this money on garbage. And so there you have it. I mean,
tell me Gruden's not going to get it done out west?
Well, no, Breer's got this like thing in my head now, because I can't think of a flaw in the thinking, is that if you have a good quarterback and a good coach,
right,
and you have depth, everything else is ancillary. I'll ask you, Ted Johnson, can you name a non-quarterback that's indispensable on a team? Like, that this team's not going to win without that player.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's tough. I mean, you could say maybe Aaron Donald.
Yeah, that's one of the ones we came up with.
Yeah. You know, I would say J.J. Watt, but I mean, I think J.J. Watt's the greatest player ever. But you have Deshaun Watson, right, on that team.
You have Clowney, right? Well, Clowney hasn't signed anywhere yet, right?
Right.
He's still a free agent? Or did he get franchised?
Didn't they franchise him?
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah. I mean, you have Clowney right next to him.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult, if not impossible.
Khalil Mack is another one that I thought of.
Right.
Yeah.
Clear difference maker when he got to Chicago.
You know, Chicago's defense was good before he got there, and they still did nothing in the playoffs. So you could even argue against him.
Yeah. So it's almost like the Patriots.
Very rare to find somebody that's more, you know, that's just as important to a team as a quarterback.
Right. Like when you see the Patriots not signing these guys, and I've said this for years with the Patriots, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Every other team it does dumb crap. I mean, the Jets, they're saying, made like smart moves in terms of personnel that they got, but I mean, getting getting a slot receiver and then two linebackers isn't exactly going to change the.
Well, you were saying. The Jets needed to get better on defense badly.
But they needed anything.
But getting a guy like Mosley, who's been in the league, 5-6 years and has been a Pro Bowler 4 times? I mean, that's a significant impact on defense. I don't know about anybody else they got, but in the end, that's something that vastly improves the Jets, who have been mediocre to poor for how long?
Forever.
But here's the thing.
All my life.
Here's the thing. They might have the quarterback now.
Might?
They might have the quarterback out. Yeah, you heard me. Might have the quarterback right now.
Well, then maybe
he's trending in that direction.
Maybe you don't have a Sammy D signed helmet like I did.
Sammy Dean Express. I understand.
I'll tell you, that got more valuable as the season went on. I tracked it. Sam Darnold signed helmet, baby.
How much is it worth now?
$10,000.
And how much was it? And that's up from what? The $7,000 you paid for it?
No, $100.
Okay.
People saw Sammy D and they just, he might as well write HOF on it.
Yeah. Do you have the head coach?
What, Gase?
Yeah.
I don't know.
The bug-eyed head coach, is he your guy?
He's certainly a lot better than everyone else that they've had.
You didn't know he was bug-eyed until he took his hat off.
No.
I was like, whoa, okay, I've never seen Adam Gase without the hat pulled way down. Bro,
have you ever had a head coach
take the
like
hat
that
off?
In your life, I understand.
Never.
That looked at you and you went, oh my God.
Yeah, would that be like something in the locker room that would be weird that like everyone would be talking about?
Position coach, head coach, something like that? You've never had anything like that?
They had their hat always down.
No, but so I mean, you look at the guy and went, oh man.
Oh. I have to think about that. Let me think about that. A coach that I would look at and just was kind of like,
oh, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. No, not really. Okay. I'd have to Rob Ryan maybe was a little like sometimes with his hair and his flowing hair.
Sure.
Rob Ryan just likes to get wasted and get him fun.
He likes to have a good time. Robbo likes to have a good time. Yeah. But I was one side out about the Jets and those are nice. Anthony Barr's a nice pickup. He's a good player. Have they overpaid for CJ Mosley? Yes. But they have tons of money. So they overpaid for these guys. But Greg Williams is now the defensive coordinator there, and you know he's a little bit kind of douchey. He's old school. He's a little bit
kind of
feels like he's self-important. But the guy can coach defense. So Greg Williams is now the D coordinator for the Jets. That's a major upgrade for as far as coaching on that side of the ball. So
yeah, maybe they'll win 6 games. All right, Henry. Hello.
Hey guys, just thought of 2 more names that you guys might consider in that. More valuable than a quarterback on their team, but Von Miller in Denver.
Von Miller.
Odell Beckham in New York, just considering that Eli's a pile of garbage. So
you know, that's not a bad the OBJ one isn't a bad because of this. Okay, you don't need a great quarterback maybe to play with Odell Beckham because he's one of the maybe 3 or 4 guys in the NFL that can take a slant route to the house. And so you don't. It's one of those deals. All you got to do is get him the ball, and then let him do his thing. So you don't have to maybe have the best quarterback, throwing to him. And so yeah, Von Miller is a game changer too,
right?
Much like Khalil Mack, like we mentioned already.
But if you look at the receivers on the best receivers on the teams that have won the Super Bowl recently, it hasn't been like a Julio Jones or OBJ.
Yeah, you're right. Because if you have to have if you have a wide receiver that is a diva guy who's expects the ball, or he wants, if he doesn't get his touches, he sulks. You have a major problem. An offense should just have an organic flow to it, you know. And you take definitely what the defense. If you feel like you have to, continually, get the target a guy that's in double coverage, and then you don't really have an efficient offense that's going to be. you know, it's going to be worth a damn, you know, if you got to do that all the time.
All right. Have you been in a situation where there was like an Antonio Brown type player? Did you see why Pittsburgh was willing to eat the dead cat money and they were willing to trade him for mid-round picks?
Yeah, that was just such a malcontent that you just had to get rid of him.
Terry Glenn.
That's the first guy I thought of.
Yeah.
And it was weird, though. There was no social media back then, and Terry was very much a guy to himself, right? So he wasn't brash. He wasn't outspoken. You know, he didn't show up, you know, the day of a game when he was inactive in a fur coat, right? like Antonio Brown did. So I would say that would be the closest thing to a guy that really didn't want to be there. There's two players, and they're both from Ohio State, that I always say athletically they were on a completely different page than the rest of us. It just naturally gifted players. Was Andy Katsamori was one. He got hurt after 3 years and didn't play any longer. But the other guy's Terry Glenn. He had talent. Unlike he made it look easy. When you're out there on a field with pros and you see one pro making it look like he's hardly trying and he's just better than everybody, then that was Terry Glenn right there. He was the malcontent. Things ended bad, but he wasn't outspoken and he didn't. There was social media wasn't there for him to kind of, you know, bolster up his arrogance and his, you know, diva qualities.
Now, could someone like Antonio Brown, you know, screw up a season just based on their behavior?
It depends on how the organization handles it. And the Steelers do not handle Antonio Brown well. So no. You can have guys that are like that, that have, you know, big egos and are very, you know, verbally very kind of outspoken. But if you have a coaching staff and a team that can, you know, keep that kind of, you know, in check, then it's not a big deal. But the Steelers never put, you know, any kind of clamps on him or parameters on him. They let him be him. All right, well, then you're gonna pay the price for that.
Yeah, they've let players. I mean, they've always been a player-friendly organization, and Antonio Brown somehow found a way to screw that all up, too. Now he gets to be in Oakland, where I'm sure, well, he got money, so who knows. I still don't think he's going to be happy. All right, yesterday, Russell Westbrook, went at a fan, and this is becoming, I guess Utah is a very difficult place to play. You wouldn't think so.
The evidence is mounting up, though, to maybe suggest that.
Because I'm guessing it's very, if they sell beer at all, it's very low alcohol, so I can't say that there's a drinking would be much of an issue. But we will talk about that in just a moment.
Or out of town, Boston's Home for Sports is on your phone. Listen live or download an original podcast. 98.5 The Sports Hub. That's an app.
There's a lot more to worry about than
Toucher and Rick.
It's a real nightmare.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
I'm gonna say one thing. I'll f him up. He said he's playing. I promise you, he's still playing. I swear to God. I'll f you up.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. That is Russell Westbrook getting into a fan in Utah. Apparently, Utah is like this savage place to play. That the fans are very, very out there. Now, my opinion of Utah is obviously that very Mormon, which is yes. No swearing.
Nope.
No caffeine. No liquor.
Yeah, that's all true. Yeah, that's all very true.
So I would think that it would be like a wholesome place to play, but apparently that is not the case. And Westbrook talked after the game about what happened.
The realization of it is how it started was young man and his wife in the stands told me to get down on my knees like he used to. And for me, that's just completely disrespectful to me. I think it's racial. I think it's just inappropriate in a sense of there's no protection for the players. I think there are a lot of great fans and around the world that like to come to the game and enjoy the game. And there are people that come to the game and to say mean, disrespectful thing about me, my family, for many years, man, I've done all the right things. I've never done anything to hurt or harm anybody. I've never been in any trouble. Never fought a fan. Been in the league 11 years. Clean slate. I take whatever, all the criticism from everybody. I've been doing the same thing for years. That's just one video, but throughout the whole game, throughout the whole, since I've been here, especially here in Utah, every time I come here, it's a lot of disrespectful things I said.
All right. I can understand the impulse to want to kick the hell out of someone who's saying things to you under the guise that you could not touch them. But he said, getting on your knees, can someone, 617-779-0985, and this is totally out of ignorance.
Getting on your knees like you used to, I think was the...
getting on your knees like you used to. Can someone explain to me how that is, has racial overtones?
Sounds more homophobic to me.
It sounds like more homophobic. Well... one thing I'll say about the fan, regardless of what they said, is he was genius and put himself on television and agreed to an interview after the game, which is a real slick move by that fan. Hey, here I am. Work. Everybody, yeah. Look at me. I'm the guy. And here's how the fan responded.
He's got to be a professional. I mean, she was sitting down the entire time. Me and him were just, it was actually, we were kind of having fun, to be honest.
At least you thought you were having fun.
Yeah, he was smiling at one point, and there—I mean, there was a lot of people because it was when, you know, Joe would come by and poked Paul George in the eye, and then Joe goes over and apologizes immediately. Russ is just f-bombing and carrying on, acting a fool down here, and everybody's getting on him. And he had, I guess, heat. I thought it was ice. I just told him, I'm like, just sit down and ice your knees, bro. And he turned to me and he's like, that's heat. That's heat. And I'm like, well, you're going to need it. And then it turned into not safe for work.
All right.
No. Get up on your knees. Get up on your knees. Huh.
Well, that was decidedly homophobic what Wiggins was doing then. I don't know if he was even homophobic. He was just suggesting that he wanted pleasure. Now you, Ted Johnson, you've had to have faced this before, is fans yelling at you.
Fireman Fred was the biggest one.
Oh, God, he is such an idiot.
He was annoying. I got into a heated exchange. I was...
Oh.
Yeah, well, I got it. You know, I was... I was hurt that game, and so it was our opening game against the Jets in the Meadowlands when Vinny Testaverde was the quarterback, and he tore his Achilles in that game.
Oh, I remember that. Okay.
It was 98, 99? I can't remember. 99, maybe?
Parcells was the head coach with the Jets at the time. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So
that
me
was
and
actually
Fireman
when
Fred.
They had a chance to win.
but I never had to deal with any racial issues either, Fred. You know, I think this is a very real issue for a lot of guys. And so even though some people might interpret it as a homophobic slur, that's not how Russell Westbrook internalized that.
Is there something about Twitter where people are a like an imaginary guy that doesn't exist that you would want to kill them?
It's tough. I mean, because
you put up with this your entire life and you're a big guy. When people are anonymous and they come and they start saying personal things about you, because we've discussed it yesterday, you're bloodthirsty.
Mm.
So we talked
in
about,
certain situations.
Right,
yes.
Don't laugh. It's true.
That you're bloodthirsty. You thirst for blood. Is there a fantasy of you like finding out where one of these guys live and you like go to their house and beat the hell out of them?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Because the fake tough guy on Twitter, it sucks because you know people can hide behind anonymity and they can come at you I have divulged a lot of my personal stuff. And when people come at me with my personal stuff, it's kind of like, okay, drug addict or, you know, they reference my issues with drugs in the past. I'm like, okay, well, I've told that information. That doesn't hold power over me. But when there's mistakes I've made that they keep throwing in my face, that can get tiresome. Or when they don't have the facts right, there's accusing me of something that did not happen, and I can't go back at them. It's very hard to do because if you go back at them on Twitter,
you can't win.
You cannot win.
And you
justify
them.
And they have their eight followers that they have. They get to see their response to you. But if I respond, then it can become one of those things where it can become viral.
Well, that's why I got off Twitter, and I swear to God this is the truth, because I was afraid I was going to say something that was going to get me in trouble because everyone gets fired from it. But there is, even for me, who is not tough, again, I'll tell you, I'm very good at getting beaten up. I'm not so great at winning fights. But like when some people say stuff to you that they would never say if they saw you, Like, that's like cowardly. Like, you're just a, mm-hmm. you're a pussy. Like, I mean, you're just doing this.
And there's a lot of pussies on Twitter, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them on Twitter.
And you don't, even if, I would respect you if it was even really you. Like, if it was someone that, like, it was pictures of you and, like, your mm-hmm. dog and stuff. Fair enough.
Yeah.
You don't like me and you're saying this stuff. At least you had the balls to put your name behind it. But, no, I you can't win a Twitter fight. And I always was tempted to get in them. And every time I did that, I would just feel like an idiot. Yeah. And then, you know, and just an idiot, I feel.
What I'll do is I'll just block it. And so I don't have to see it or hear it any time. I don't need that aggravation. I don't have social media to have myself opened up for that kind of attacking. So I just block them. So, and, you know, and more times, you know, I have ways to find out who these people are. And so I can identify. You know, and
how do you do it?
Everybody, well, I'll tell you off air.
Yeah, you tell me off air because I'm fascinated.
Yeah.
I don't even want to do anything. I'm just fascinated by some of these people are.
Yeah, I got friends in law enforcement, you know, that they can have access to things. And so you can get, I mean, I can get, and more times than not, the people that I've found are, you just go, I look at their profile and I see what the picture of them and what they're kind of about. And I go, you almost feel sorry for them. You
well,
know,
that's what always
it's
happens.
It's almost like somebody, some of these people are pretty, they look like they lead pathetic lives. And so I just go, okay, they got to live in their own shell every single day.
Well, that's
their own punishment.
Well, Rich and I have gotten death threats before. And when the cops, because you got to report it. And so when the cops go to the guys' houses, they're always crying.
See?
The minute they get there.
Exactly.
And like so repentant and you know, crying. And I don't know, I'm sorry, it's been a hard time. And it's like, all right.
You know what everybody on in the public eye needs to do is have an army of people on Twitter, though. That if somebody comes at you, you send your army out to go get them, you know, and you release the hounds. And mm-hmm. so then and you talk about the backing down from that point on. You can just sick people on
it. I don't even want to get involved in that.
I hear you, bud.
I'll get fired. I'll do something to get me fired. That's exactly what's going to happen. All right, Matt, Russell Westbrook said... that the fan said something about getting on his knees, and this is entirely my ignorance. I'm obviously not saying this didn't happen. What would he be referring to that was racist?
Probably referring to like some, a time like when African Americans were in a submissive state, like slavery or something like that. That's probably right where Russell Westbrook's mind went. Sure.
Okay, that's got to be it, Freddie. I mean, he's it's a reference to slavery.
Okay.
Is my feeling, and that's my feeling. That's exactly how Russell Westbrook took it, not as a homophobic slur, but more as a racial.
Well, I could see you getting very upset if it was a racial thing. I just can't believe that guy who said it or said whatever he said. Maybe he did say something about ice in his knees. Agreed to go on television.
But I love how the guy, the fan in Utah, who's in the middle of this controversy, is he's got to be a professional. You know, he's got to be a professional.
Well, you should.
Like, he knows what being a professional is all about.
Right, but you should be able to give if you pay for the seats. You should be able to give the guys some crap.
But you cross the line with personal stuff.
Absolutely. Well, I'm telling you that if I was an athlete and people were saying personal stuff about me and my family, it would be exceptionally frustrating to me because they're doing it entirely mm-hmm. because they know I can't do anything to
right.
them.
Right. That's exactly right. Now, Russell, when you start threatening, that's where I think he has the right to say something back, though. If you're going to,
absolutely think he has the right to say something back, especially if he took it as something that was, you know, racist.
Yep.
Absolutely, I'm all for it. I'm telling you, if you're in a situation where someone's taking personal, now listen, if they say you suck and like you know swear at you
that's
and stuff
totally
like
different.
That, who
totally
cares?
Different. Yep.
I mean, you have every right to do that to me. You have every right to. I don't care. Well, I mean, and if I do care, it's on my lack of any self-esteem. But anytime that someone is in a position where they can take personal shots at you, where A, they're doing it under a false alias, or B, they're in a situation where they know that they're completely safe because there's nothing that the other person can do about it, I think that I would find that incredibly frustrating. And again, if on Twitter or Instagram, someone who's like a real person takes shots at me, I respect that a lot more. Again, like, I mean, all right, you owned up to it. I know, here's who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. You don't like me. But when it's, I mean, it's really like you're a pussy. Like, I mean, you're hiding behind identity.
Yeah, it's like always the guy with the Tom Brady picture. It's
yeah.
like, I love Pats 402 or something like that.
Right.
Or a lot of times when you go to the bio, it's they put in their bio that their whole thing is to be the agitator.
Right.
To be
yeah.
the aggressor. Like, that's their whole thing.
But the thing is, they don't necessarily hate you. They hate everybody. Mm-hmm. And you just happen to be their target for the day.
Sure.
You know what? You know what? You know how you get people back? You treat them like a stray dog, Fred. You just like, and with indifference. No, you
oh,
just.
Oh, all right. I thought yeah, just going in another direction.
I thought you had made me dog food or something.
I thought there was something else coming there. All
you
right,
just you just act like they're not even there, man.
Okay.
And that gets them more worked up than anything else.
No, that my fear with Twitter was that I was going to do. I mean, dude, I took a video of myself in my underwear when I was on Ambien and put it up on the internet. On
Ambien
Twitter.
Makes you do some weird stuff.
I can't take it anymore.
I thought it was one of your best works.
Do you know how close I was to exposing myself in that thing?
We kind of saw that in the photo there, Fred.
One centimeter more.
Well aware of how close it was.
And I'm lucky that I'm built the way I am, so it's very difficult to see me.
You're pushing things down where it could have popped up.
This is on Twitter you did this?
Yeah.
You and Jim Irsay. I missed the midnight tweets from Jim Irsay, man.
And there was never anything I put on Twitter where I was like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, this is really helping things out. Like, Rich is on Twitter. And he like retweets the show and stuff, and he retweets stuff. But he's like not going to get drunk and go off on something on Twitter. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I said, you run our Toucher and Rich Twitter,
smart man.
You do that.
Yep.
I'll get off Twitter, and I have an Instagram. But Instagram is
it's more happy, right?
Plus you have to put a picture up.
Mm-hmm.
So. You can't just go with a gut reaction to something.
Right.
You have to find a picture. And then 95 times out of 100, if you're trying to find a picture, you'll just go, screw it.
Yeah. It's a cooling off period. Looking for that picture, you're like, okay, all right, you calm down and you come to your senses.
Yeah. In the first like 2 days I was off Twitter, I would find myself like an idiot. Like, I'd see something and I would like go to tweet it. And I'm thinking, moron, who cares about what you have to say about all this crap?
I think about that all the time. That's the one thing about Twitter. I have a conflicting kind of deal with it. Am I so self-important that people are really going to care what I think at this very moment in time? But, you know, I've found that a lot of people do, Fred.
Yeah.
They want to know what you're thinking.
Well,
all the time.
They can listen to a four-hour show five days a week. Andrew, go ahead.
Yeah, so just on the Russell Westbrook thing, I was out in San Francisco and, you know, fans who do these type of things and the same people who are on Twitter, you know, doing those fights, they make the game unenjoyable for everyone else. And I was up there in left field and these people are yelling at the right fielder or left fielder about his tattoos, talking about him getting, you know, in prison and where to get the tattoos from. And it's just ridiculous. And you look at these people and you're like, okay, that makes sense. I mean, look at them. And I just think athletes, I understand it's frustrating, but for someone like Russell or someone who's playing in these professional sports, they go home to their million-dollar homes, their million-dollar cars, you know, their lives that are better than 99% of people in the world. So while racial things is one thing, if it's something where get off your knees or just shut up and go home.
I agree. I agree with you with that, is that as an athlete, I understand the frustration, but, I mean, you got to have – I mean, I get crapped on all the time.
Yes, you do.
I mean, I get crapped on all the time. I'm talking about when someone gets exceptionally personal. But, yeah, I get crapped on all the time. It's part of the business. It's part of the job.
And we love everyone you mug.
Yep, that was me on Ambien. Now, it's funny. I was out with Maddie Siegel. I'm gonna tell this real quick.
Doing jumping jacks in the other room.
I was out with Maddie Siegel one time, and I go, "Are you on Twitter?" And he goes, "Not really." And I go, "Watch this." And I just mash the buttons on my phone and then send out the tweet. And I go, watch this. You drunk a-hole, you piece of crap. And then he was like, why do you do this? All right, so we'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.